Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic.
It is my pleasure to not welcome one guest, but two guests to the podcast. Welcome Sean and Brandon.
It's good to be here. Thanks.
Hey James, glad to be back.
All right, so Sean Eisenhower, Brandon Wheel, both from Iridicio. We decided to try and shake things up a little bit. We're going to do a three-person discussion around asset hierarchy. Why, you may ask? Well, there's a lot of confusion and a lot of differing opinions on asset hierarchy, so I figured what better way to get through some of this stuff and put more people on the podcast to argue about it. So, Sean, Brandon, you both work for Iridicio. You've both been involved with asset hierarchy for a significant period of time, whether, Brandon, it was your time in the Navy, Sean, your time at ExxonMobil, and then through consulting and training throughout the course of the years. But for our listeners, what exactly is asset hierarchy and why is it important that we care about if it's structured right or not?
So for me, the asset hierarchy is the relationship of your parent and children, systems, and how we collect data.
And I would, I'd add to that and say that at the end of the day, the equipment hierarchy is a way for me to drill down into problems and roll cost up. So I can drill down and understand what's going on, but I can roll up costs to be able to understand how my business is performing.
All right. So it's a parent-child relationship between assets, systems, maybe even possibly plants or units within a company. But then it also allows us to drill down deep into the maintenance and reliability data, but roll up those maintenance costs so we can understand where we're spending our money, where we're not spending our money, and where we might be better to reallocate some funds, correct?
Absolutely.
Yep. All right. So what is the standard way to build a hierarchy? Is there a standard out there? Is it just based on every site is different, every organization is different? How do we do that?
Yeah, there's some guidelines in ISO 14224 that really directed at the oil and gas, but could apply to really to anybody.
Yeah, I think as I look at it, it's 14224 gives us a lot of guidelines. It helps us understand, especially the lower part of the hierarchy. But you also need to understand how you're going to roll cost all the way up through the organization, which is a little more than what you see just within 14224.
All right. So 14224 gives us some references. Can that be used in other industries as it was originally developed for oil and gas?
Yeah, absolutely. I've used that standard as kind of a guideline to help clients, through the discussion of how to organize their hierarchy in a way that, meets the intent. Like Sean has said a couple of times, I want to make sure that it rolls up and rolls down appropriately, or I'm able to drill down into those details. So you may not follow it 100%. The way it's written in the standard, but there's enough there to really give you a good idea of, if you've never done hierarchy before, never had to modify it before, there's a lot of good information there as far as, the levels and how granular you should get.
All right. Now, if our listeners don't have access to 14224, is there anywhere else they can look for information on hierarchies as well, or another way to organize it?
Yeah, you can Google it, and there are quite a few different examples out on the web to kind of show what some folks are doing. Most of your CMMS providers will provide you with information in this realm as they're, if you're setting up a new EAM or a CMMS, they're going to have some recommendations as to what they would like to see. I can tell you those don't always follow ISO 14224. So, you may find later on that it doesn't match up. But as long as it's allowing you to drill down and roll cost up, then, it's really serving its purpose. And if it doesn't look just like the standard, I don't think that's a huge issue.
All right. What benefits do organizations realize when they actually get this hierarchy? I know you mentioned drilling down, rolling up costs, a few other things, but what do they really get when doing this? from a maintenance standpoint, not just a business management standpoint?
You know, I think there's a couple things as I think about what you get from the hierarchy. First of all, it gives me the ability as a technician or someone working in the storeroom to be able to find information, to be able to find parts, to be able to put parts at the right levels so that everyone knows where to look to find them. I think that's a key benefit. I think the second thing that I would talk about is that it allows me to look at history. You know, if I know that this solenoid or this sensor has failed in the past, I just don't remember where it was and I don't remember how we fixed it. If I know how to drill down into the hierarchy and I know that the work has been charged at the right level of the hierarchy, then I can go in and find that information and possibly, you know, even in an emergency situation, cut down my troubleshooting time.
Yeah, James, this is Brandon. When we, you know, we just did one on job plan library, right? Great example. If your hierarchy isn't organized in a way that it gets to the right level of detail, then I'm not really going to have a great place to store my job plans.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, I'm working on a paper right now around asset data, asset information, all that sort of stuff. And if it's not organized, where do you link the engineering documents to? Where do you collect that process data? Where do you link all these other things? It's very, very difficult without a good asset hierarchy. And I think that is a key foundation for many of the other things we need to do. Sean, you mentioned the fact that we drill down in, you know, maintenance data or in cost and roll up in maintenance cost. One of the other things we can do is if we're using asset hierarchy and we're using failure codes, we can start to look at those macro level trends that are occurring in different systems or different parts of the plant so that we can start to tackle some of those systemic or latent issues. So I think those are just some of the benefits that a good asset hierarchy brings to us.
Yeah, you know, let's talk about what a bad asset hierarchy looks like a little bit, James, because I don't think everyone necessarily knows what we mean by bad asset hierarchy. I'll give you an example and maybe you can jump in with some of your examples, you and Brandon. But, you know, when I think back to one of the asset hierarchies that I saw a few years ago, it had been set up by the original individuals who built the plant. So the contractors had gone in and they had put all the pumps underneath a level called pump. And that meant every pump in the facility was underneath that pump. All the robots were all under robot. Then when you go across and you get into electrical, it's the same kind of thing. Switch gear, all listed under switch gear. So they grouped all the like assets. It wasn't a hierarchy. It was a list of those components throughout the whole entire facility, grouped by whatever asset class that they were. This causes a lot of problems when it comes time to start recording history and rolling up costs. But not only that, you just don't need to do it because you've got asset classes within your CMMS and your EAM that you can use for these kind of things. So that's one example of what I would call kind of a bad hierarchy.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I've seen that approach. And like you said, there's asset classes, there's asset types that allow us to group those things differently by that class or type to do that type of analysis. But the hierarchy needs to be system-based, moving up to the organization and so on and so forth. I've also seen it where you have to have a mandatory 9 levels. And so some organizations I've seen will just put line 1 underneath that, line 1 underneath that, line 1. Then they'll start getting into the individual assets because they have to have so many levels. You know, it just becomes cumbersome and a pain for individuals to find the correct asset. If you're an operator looking for work requests, if you got to hit line 1 3 times, break it down 3 different ways, you're just going to pick line 1 and not go to the specific asset. And a good hierarchy to me is a hierarchy that allows us to find the assets so we can write work orders, write job plans, do all those things too with relative ease.
No, I completely agree. I'll add one more thing to that. I think, you know, the other thing that I would say is a bad hierarchy is when you have a situation where you've got, you know, every area of the plant building their hierarchy differently. So nothing has the same number of levels. Nothing's at the same place. As we start to use Internet of Things and industrial Internet of Things, we can't route things to the right levels because everything's at a different level in the hierarchy. So, you know, the two really, I would say, bad hierarchies that I've seen over the years are those that just don't match from one area to another, and then those that are based on equipment class or some other random factor.
Yeah, one other bad example that I've seen is they'll have the plant at the top level, then it'll be production. And then underneath production, they have all the assets related to production. So now you're sorting through a list of thousands of assets trying to find the right one. It's just not easy to use.
I'll add one more sin to that too is, you know, not basing it off of a system, but really just the physical location of those assets. So, you know, I've got building 308 and underneath that is all my stuff. So when you roll the costs up, that is the most expensive building in the world to maintain ever because I'm all of the costs from all of my different and sometimes unrelated systems, right? An air handler might be in a certain room that supplies, you know, a completely different building. But I've broken up the costs of that air handling system because the components just happen to be in another building.
Yeah. All great examples of what we mean by a bad asset hierarchy. Now that we know what's good, what's bad, do we have to follow ISO 14224 to the T to reap some of these benefits, or is there a lot of flexibility with it?
I've found that there's some flexibility with it. You know, sometimes you end up with limitations on the number of levels that you can use based on whatever, you know, EAM or CMMS that you're using. You know, sometimes there's some debate about, well, what is a maintainable item, you know, within that organization. So when you start getting down to the very bottom levels, so, you know, I've seen it where as long as the organization comes to an agreement that, you know, here's what's in, here's what's out, here's the rules, here's what we're going to apply from the standard, and here's what really doesn't make sense for us to do, that you're still going to get, you know, most, if not almost all of the benefits.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with what Brandon said there. You know, at the end of the day, I think it is. It's standardization. As long as you standardize whatever you decide to go with, and as long as it's got basic levels and it doesn't meet any of the criteria that we mentioned earlier, I think you can definitely get there.
All right. So with that, what is a maintainable item, Brandon?
Well, I'm looking at the standard right now, and they have you know, a gas generator, it's a gas turbine broken down a gas generator, and the lowest maintainable item that they have listed here would be a thrust bearing. So it really could be a component. You can get down to the component level because I'm going to write a PM, or I'm going to have a test point, or I'm going to have some sort of Internet of Things sensor, right, that is going to monitor the condition of that individual component. Now, all that right. May not be where I write my work orders to. Depending on how your system is set up, I may not write a work order to the thrust bearing itself. It may just be to the equipment, depending on, once again, the rules of engagement for your work management system. But yeah, I need to know the major components of that particular piece of equipment.
All right, perfect. Now, we mentioned the levels of hierarchy a few times. What do we mean by levels? Just so everyone's clear.
So, you know, some examples would be, you know, your plant level, the system, right? So what system is all this stuff contained within? Underneath that a system, I would see a grouping of equipment, you know, and then those could be broken down depending on the complexity into like sub-units or sub-pieces of equipment, sections of equipment, if it's a, you know, a very large complex monster. Followed by, you know, the individual components or maintainable items.
All right. So it's just the different classification or groupings of the types of things we're looking at. So system, subsystem, equipment, maintainable item, part, so on and so forth. Stuff of that nature, right?
Yep.
Perfect. Now, both of you have probably had some extensive experience with this. So how does an organization go about trying to fix or reorganize their existing hierarchy?
So I'll start with this one. You know, it's tough. It's tough to go in and reorganize a hierarchy after you've already got history associated with it and records attached. So, you know, it's one of those things where given an opportunity, I want to get it right when we install the CMMS or the EAM. It's not something that I necessarily want to have to go back and visit later. Now, I will tell you, in some cases, we've gotten lucky, and the CMMS or the EAM allowed us to create a second hierarchy within the system. And so what we do is we will leave the old hierarchy in effect, but then build the new hierarchy in the new position and then switch them when the time comes. That's probably, if you didn't get it right from the beginning or you didn't take the time to build the hierarchy in the beginning, that's probably your best second guess, I would say.
And I'd say to add on to that, step one is admit you have a problem. Right? We've had quite a few clients that we've worked with that really assured us that their hierarchy was exactly the way they needed it. We didn't need to spend any time looking at it at all. It was fine, only to, you know, later discover as we start looking at some of the other business processes that needed to be worked on that, hey, the hierarchy wasn't as good as we had thought. And there's a bunch of stuff that's missing. And there's a bunch of items that were added, you know, to the plant floor that don't match what's in the computer system. So, you know, step one, I think, is at least admit that it's probably not as good as you think it is and take a hard look at it and do an audit, you know, see if there's any assets that haven't had anything charged against them in forever. Well, chances are they aren't here anymore and we just left them in the system.
Yeah, absolutely. That is the first step, is admit you have a problem with your asset hierarchy or anything else you may have personally, Brandon. So
thanks for that, James.
I think one of the other pieces that goes along with that is that you have to have a plan moving forward. So Sean, like you mentioned, setting up a separate hierarchy within the same system, moving things over. Absolutely, that it makes life so much easier. But we have to understand what we're going to do differently. So I think once we understand that we have a problem, we need to start drafting what is it going to look like in the future. Do we have an asset data standard or an equipment data standard that spells out how our hierarchy will work, how we're going to name things, and so on and so forth, and kind of move those along? I think if we don't do that and we just willy-nilly build another one, we'll end up in the exact same place we are now.
Absolutely. Totally agree.
Now, one of the other things I commonly see within that is that assets are not defined properly. What do I mean by that is, where does an asset begin and where does it end? What is that asset boundary, if you will? I think that's vital. That way, if you're talking about a pump over here in this department and a pump over here in another department, that we're truly looking at the same thing. One might include the control system and the other one might not. And that changes a lot of things, the dollar, the costing, the, you know, the failure history, those things. And I think that needs to be defined. So with that, how do you define equipment boundaries?
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you're doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com.
To add on to your point there, James, I see this a lot as far as, you know, it can be very difficult looking at a large system and trying to decide where to draw the boundaries. Some are very clear cut, very easy. Others, like when I start talking about, you know, air supply systems, electrical distribution systems, steam supply systems, you know, at one point does that system stop being the steam supply system and start becoming the asset that it's servicing, right? You know, and it's usually a critical valve or control point or something like that that I would pick. But the key is to pick something and be consistent, like you mentioned, across the plant. You know, I can't do it pumps over here a certain way and pumps over there a different way, because you're going to end up with a mess. So it's really, you know, a system boundary is how you want to define it. So, you know, pick something that's intelligent that works for most of the plant and then try to manage by exception if there's a couple of oddballs out there.
Yeah, it's absolutely agree. We got to figure out what is going to work for our organization, manage by exception, not the rule, and set that stuff up. I was with an organization once upon a time who didn't have that clearly defined. So what they called a labeler in one site was in fact just that labeler. Another site included the infeed, outfeed conveyors, and the accumulation tables. Another site was different from that as well. So when they started looking at, well, what's our cost to maintain labelers? You look across all the different sites and the maintenance dollars over capital asset replacement was dramatically different. No one could figure out why, because they're all running quite well. Well, it's because you included all those extra systems, and it makes that evaluation so much harder. So like you said, pick something that makes sense, use that by rule, and manage those odd exceptions here or there.
Yeah. And one of the kind of the thumb rules that I use is, you know, is this thing solely dedicated to that piece of equipment or that system, right? And is it absolutely required to function? And that's a pretty good indicator that, hey, it belongs with that piece of equipment or with that system, because that's all it does, right? Now, if it's something that supplies a bunch of different assets, you know, it might be its own system.
Yes, absolutely. Now, we've talked about the hierarchy, kind of classifying equipment, defining those boundaries, that sort of thing. But there's also more to that. And ISO 14224 covers some other things. What specifically does it cover in addition to just that hierarchy piece?
So I think one of the things that we'll talk about is the data collection standards and failure coding and the coding that we use across the various assets, which they give you some really good examples in that standard of what you should expect and how you might choose to do your equipment coding.
Yeah, so how we number it, smart numbering, how we name it, the failure codes that go along with those specific classes, those sorts of things. But if you look at any given CMMS, you're going to have at least tens, maybe hundreds of different fields for each piece of equipment. You know, it might be manufacturer information, might be maintenance information, might be operating context information, and so on and so forth. Do we require all of those fields?
I don't think you need all of those fields. I think you need to sit down. It's the same discussion we've had for a lot of these other areas. You need to sit down and decide from a business case standpoint what makes sense. You know, if I'm sitting here populating a whole lot of fields that I'm not going to use in the future, it just doesn't really seem to make a lot of financial sense to me.
Yeah, I'll add on to that. If I've got some, you know, key business metrics that I'm looking at, or, you know, I've got a root cause analysis process or a PM optimization process that I need to know certain things to, you know, feed that beast and then make some decisions later, I almost work from the end in mind and work backwards of, okay, well, here's the report that we need to run, or here's the data we need to show. What do I need to feed that? And then decide what critical fields are required to, you know, get that report, get those metrics, get that process to work.
Yeah, I think that's great. Great advice. Start with that end in mind, understand what decisions you're gonna have to make, what data you're gonna need to make those decisions, and work backwards from there. It costs money to collect that data. It costs money to govern it, to make sure it's correct and up to date all the time, and so on and so forth. So let's be very specific in what we actually need. And like you said, begin with the end in mind. Now, what barriers do you guys see a lot of organizations go through when they're trying to clean up the asset data, clean up the hierarchy, and how do they overcome those?
Well, I think one of the things we commonly see, and I think about a couple of sites that I've worked in here recently, it's like I said earlier, it's a lot of work. And if you can't dedicate someone to leading the effort to build the hierarchy, then you'll struggle because, you know, it takes someone who's very detail oriented, who's very organized. They've got to come up with the standards first. Once they get the standards, then we start putting the assets into those standards and start building up what will become the hierarchy for the CMMS. And that's hours and hours. I see a lot of folks try to do this on the fly, and when they do it on the fly, they end up with that mismatched hierarchy where one area does it one way and another area does it another. So I think the biggest hurdle is dedicating people for the amount of time that it takes to truly work through and clean up a hierarchy.
All right. So dedicated resources, think it through, build your standards, have someone organized that's able to do this stuff, and don't just wing it.
Absolutely. And I think you got to find the right person. You know, it's not everybody. If you put me in a room and made me build a hierarchy, I'd go crazy in about 3 minutes. You know, it's just not something that I would be able to do very well. So finding someone who can really handle sitting there and building and making sure that they match from one area to another, it's a special talent. So I think, you know, one other thing I would say is make sure you get the right person to take the job.
Yeah, and I think the only thing I would build on with that is if you're implementing this hierarchy across more than one site, definitely requires that cross-functional team, or maybe not cross-functional, but cross-site team. Because if you build it at one site and then start trying to force it on others, they're not going to use it, right? So from an enterprise or corporate standpoint, need to have buy-in from all those sites on why it's going to be this way, the benefits, which is now you can start leveraging data across many more assets, many more data points. So you start getting a lot more useful information or a statistically valid information quicker, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. Fully agree.
Now, Brandon, Sean, is there any other thoughts on hierarchy that we didn't talk about that you guys want to mention?
I'll talk a little bit about the discipline to drill down. And what I mean there is, you know, if you're going to build a hierarchy, the thing that I think you have to be aware of is that hierarchy is only as good as the people who drill down and write the work orders against it. So, you know, I've seen a few hierarchies over the year and over the years, and I would say they were really good, but they were 13 levels deep. And most of the technicians and craftsmen in the organization weren't willing to drill down that far in order to write a work order. So most of the work orders were being written at the building level, meaning that our history was destroyed, our parts consumption was destroyed, we couldn't roll up cost, we couldn't see asset cost, asset maintenance cost. You know, we lost all the benefits. And we may have done a great job on setting the hierarchy up, but unfortunately, we didn't make sure that we instilled the discipline to make sure that it would be used within our business processes.
Yeah, and I think that's part of that implementation piece, that change management piece, is how do we get people to, like you said, drill down to the right level so the information is useful. A lot of that is that the change management piece, which you so passionately talked about, I think, in one or two of our past episodes. So all that needs to be taken into consideration.
Yeah, related to that, I would add the failure codes, right? Same problem. You end up with this massive list of failure codes that maybe isn't even asset or equipment type specific. And now, you know, technicians are in there and they're picking other, right? Because it's the most, or the first one on the list, because it's just easier and they want to get done with it. So, you know, part of the ISO standard also includes some ideas around failure codes and data capture. And so you want to make sure that you've got a useful list, people are trained, and that you're doing something with the data. They realize it's just not going into some black hole.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, based on your guys' experience, what is the biggest difference that you see between the organizations that are successful and those that are not successful with asset hierarchy?
James, I'm gonna have to go with discipline. It's the discipline to build, the discipline to use, and the discipline to standardize. The organizations that will tackle that discipline and go after it are going to be a lot more successful with the hierarchy and everything that the hierarchy feeds.
I would have to agree. The one thing that I've seen that works extremely well with this is they take it one step further and they have a governance process for that data. So when you want to set up an asset, it might not be done at that particular site, or only one person at that site can do it, because they make sure and they're accountable to make sure those fields are filled out properly, the naming's done properly, the equipment class is done properly, and those sorts of things. So it's discipline, but it's also having the rigor behind to make sure that we catch mistakes before they happen. You do data quality audits to make sure that everything is set up right first time, and so on and so forth. Now, if you guys had a magic wand, what is the one thing you would change regarding asset hierarchy in the vast majority of places you guys see?
I'd take away their ability to tell me that it can't be fixed or changed. I think that's like the number one thing I hear. Oh no, that's just the way it is, and it's going to be that way. So I guess around the attitudes and understanding of no, this is a critical task. It does need to be done. We are going to have to resource it and plan for it and staff it and get it done and get it fixed. So I get tired of hearing no, because they eventually come back around and say, yeah, you were right. It's pretty jacked up, but I don't want to take like 3 months to get to that point where they come around. Let's get that over with quicker.
Well, James, if you're going to give me a magic wand, I'm just going to fix people's hierarchies. I'm just going to run around and shake the little stick and make it happen.
Cheese ball.
Because at the end of the day, you know, it's really tough, but you know, all seriousness, I would loop back to having a standard, having discipline. I'm going to use my magic wand to give them some discipline. I think there's a few folks we know that could use that.
All right. Very good. Now, we talked a lot about hierarchy. So what is the one thing that you want our listeners to take away from this conversation?
Okay. I'll go first on this one. I would say that, you know, at the end of the day, if you've got an opportunity and you're installing a new CMMS or EAM, or you're setting up a new CMMS or EAM, don't miss that opportunity to get it right from the start, because there is no easier way to build hierarchy than to build hierarchy in a new CMMS system.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Do it right the first time, be done with it. If not, you're going to be revisiting it or cursing it every day moving forward. So.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of the, that's probably the biggest point, James, is at the end of the day, when you think about this hierarchy, what you do with this hierarchy, you will live with every single day, meaning materials and storeroom will live with your whatever you create. The technicians are going to live with whatever you create. The planners are going to live with whatever you create. The leaders of the organization that want to see reporting in a certain format are going to have to live with whatever you create. So, you know, it's one of those things where you're going to touch it so often, you really want to make sure that you take good care of it.
Yes, absolutely.
And I'd say, you know, the one action is go back and look at your, so let's assume that, you know, you got what you got today. You didn't get it right the first time. But don't assume that it's good enough. You know, go back through with a critical eye, do some analysis, you know, look for any assets that are suspect, that are kind of just, you know, there's no work order history against them recently, or, you know, go walk the plant, right? Do an audit and walk down some equipment and play, can I match what's in the computer with what's on the floor? You'd be surprised at how many items you're going to find that there's a mismatch there.
Yeah, and I'll add to that, you know, if you're going to have to go in and work on them individually and start cleaning them up, it may make really good sense to take one area of the plant and pilot the process there. Build your standard based on that area, clean up that area, make it the shining example for the rest of the organization. Because I think, you know, as people start seeing how much easier it is to do things because of what you've done, it's going to make it a lot easier for you to sell the rest of the facility on cleaning up and fixing their hierarchy.
Yeah, absolutely. Start small, build that pilot and go from there. You know, create the pull instead of trying to push that rope up the hill. All right, gentlemen, I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about asset hierarchy. But before we go, where can people find out more about you two? What are you guys up to? Those sorts of things.
Well, James, you and I are going to be on the road here come the beginning of the year and hitting quite a few trade shows. And so we'll put our schedule out, but we'll be at Reliable Plant. We'll be at University of Tennessee's Marcon Conference, as well as a few others. So hope to see folks there. And if you see us, pull us over to the side, ask us questions, you know, hit us with what's going on in your plant. I can't promise you we'll have all the answers, but I tell you, between the network that you and I have, and Brandon as well, but specifically since we'll be at those trade shows, we can almost always find someone who knows what you're looking for.
Yep. You could visit our website too. It's eruditio.com, E-R-U-D-I-T-I-O. We're also pretty heavily involved, you know, on LinkedIn. You'll see posts from us. We like to share articles and blogs and ideas, and so we're pretty active on LinkedIn. You can find us on there. And then I'm very heavily involved with the Society for Maintenance Reliability Professionals, SMRP, the conference planning committee for that. So come see us at the SMRP conference as well.
All right. Excellent. I will make sure to put links to all those things you guys mentioned, LinkedIn, the conferences, even some of the resources we mentioned, like ISO 14224, maybe some others from one of our blogs or articles that we've published in the past. So once again, gentlemen, I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about asset hierarchy. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you. We're glad to be here and we enjoyed it. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.